Welcome to the Blue Gold Sports Podcast. I'm Ryan Roddy, joined by Corey Moore and Tanner Mounts. And let's just start with the obvious. Let's go back and talk about the backyard brawl a little bit. Late collapse there in the fourth quarter from West Virginia. What did you guys see?
Yeah, I mean, I saw a team fight for 3.5 quarters of a game just to let it slip away in the final 5 minutes. I mean, all three of us were there in some aspect of the game, so it felt almost obvious and too easy to predict the moment that Pittsburgh went down the field and converts a second and 30 to score a touchdown. It felt like a typical West Virginia football game. You could feel it coming. I don't know about the either two of you, but I could feel it. The moment that that happened in that stadium, that was how the game was going to play out at the end. And it kind of speaks for how the last 5 or 6 seasons have gone for West Virginia in terms of, you can't close out games, you can't win big games. And that's not even trying to take a shot at any kind of thing that Neil Brown or staff has done, but in terms of players as well, it's just been West Virginia football. It's been the way that it's been for the past 5 or 6 seasons, that you can't finish games, you can't win the big one. And that was kind of, the cherry on top of it all, that you're up 10 with 5 minutes to go, and just the emotional swing of that football game. Yeah, it's going to have fans upset by it, and it was tough to watch. As just even a football fan, watching a team kind of fall apart in the final 5 minutes like that. But I mean, you take those 5 minutes out of the game, and it was a beautiful football game. It was back and forth the entire time. There were explosive plays on both sides of the ball, both sidelines making plays. So, in terms of football, great game for West Virginia, obviously. I think that just sums up the last 5 or 6 seasons.
Yeah, I saw a collapse in the fourth quarter. You said it yourself, Ryan. I mean, it was sad to watch. There wasn't any amazing defensive plays, especially by the secondary, which is what we were talking about last week whenever it was just me and you, Ryan. The secondary for West Virginia just kind of failed them the whole time. But the problems arose whenever the offense stopped being able to keep up. Whenever West Virginia went down and then wasn't able to get a touchdown there. With about 10 minutes l left to go up by two scores, and they got a field goal instead. That's whenever I started feeling something was going to happen, Tanner, which I mean, that may be incredibly pessimistic, but that's whenever I thought, hey, Pitt is in striking distance at this point, and Pitt's offense was keeping up with West Virginia's the whole time. And people are going to be upset about this game. People were very clearly upset about this game. But I mean, at the end of the day, Pittsburgh's offense was not what it was last season. They had a lot more weapons available to them. It was very obvious that they had options that they just simply didn't have last year. So, I mean, in terms of combating that, West Virginia had to have an effective defense, and it didn't all the way through. Not there were holes, there were things that were going wrong. If West Virginia wins this game, if West Virginia doesn't collapse in such a concentrated period of time, then people are looking at this game very differently. It was back and forth, not necessarily because there was really high level football from both teams, but because I mean they were evenly matched. There was some exciting scoring going on all the way through. A lot of really frustrating officiating was happening. I'm not going to say whether it was good or bad for one team or not, but like there was frustration as someone watching the game felt like there was a lot of odd interruptions, a lot of odd calls that were made. So it was just a very, very weird game to have your eyes on, but you didn't want to look away until West Virginia fans definitely did want to look away at the end there. So I mean, hopefully West Virginia can bounce back, but that was a pretty brutal loss, pretty tough one to watch, as Tanner said.
Yeah, and I think, you talked about the Pitt offense being good, Corey. Like, I do think that the West Virginia secondary deserves a lot of the criticism that they've been getting, but it's almost like that criticism and poor play is overshadowing just how good the Pitt offense was. Eli Holstein is going to be a heck of a football player. That quarterback for Pitt that they got from Alabama, everybody knew, like, you obviously have some talent if you're being recruited by Alabama and go there as a true freshman. But, to get, like, he looked great. There were not many bad throws that he made all day. And in his first truly big game, he had to come back against Cincinnati on the road a week before. And now to do that again in the backyard brawl, I think he threw for over 300 yards. His completion percentage was really high. I think he had like three touchdown passes. To do that in your redshirt freshman season in your first ever brawl, I mean, that's incredible. Like, he looked really good. He's going to be an issue for West Virginia fans moving forward, and something to really drop your hat on if you're Pittsburgh, because he is talented and he looked really good. And that offense, I don't think, is getting enough credit because West Virginia secondary is taking so much of the blame. Was West Virginia secondary atrocious? Absolutely. But a lot of that had to do as well with the great quarterback play of Pittsburgh and Eli Holstein. And I don't think he's getting the credit that he deserves. So that offense was really, really good. Kate Bell, the new offensive coordinator for Pitt as well, did a phenomenal job calling the game late down that stretch. He had some weird calls, like that little pitch play on fourth and one. And, they struggled to run the football at times. And a lot of that has to do with West Virginia's defense. But that Pitt offense has made a complete 180 from a season ago. And they've got themselves a quarterback now, too.
Yeah, and a stat that continues to baffle me is that Pittsburgh had just 4 yards of offense before those final two drives where they scored, and then they had 152 yards of offense in those final two drives. But because they forget, you forget about the blocked punt that helps them score there and takes away possession, obviously. But you got to think, West Virginia, Corey, you and I were talking about this. One of the keys to the game was to put pressure on the quarterback. They did that, but Eli Holstein, like, credit to him, he just slipped out and he just extended drives, extended plays, and just really helped the Panthers offense.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, Holstein obviously played really great. He also had he had targets available to him. I mean, we knew that their run game was going to be very limited because they only really had one option, which was Desmond Reed. But we knew that if he was limited there, if we were able to stop him there, that he would be effective as a receiver, and he was. Against Kent State in week one, Pittsburgh only had like one main receiver, which was Kenny Johnson. Then he kind of went away against Cincinnati, and Mumfield and Reed kind of stepped up a little bit. In this game, they had everyone. Everyone played at a high level to make up for the fact that West Virginia was really stopping them with the run game, putting pressure on Holstein, obviously, but the receivers were there, and because they knew that Holstein was going to need as much help as possible, and so they took advantage of a little bit of slagging on the secondary, and they were able to get open. They were able to make plays, and once they got the ball, they were again able to make plays, able to make things happen. So, I mean, what there were definitely things that West Virginia needed to do better. Again, I mean, if there's so little offensive production by Pittsburgh statistically throughout most of the game until the end there, I think it does speak a little bit more to West Virginia than it speaks to Pittsburgh. But yeah, Pitt's offense was a lot better than it was last year, had a lot more available to them. I mean, not much more to say. I can definitely sing the praises of the Panthers all day. I think as upset as West Virginia fans are here, I think Pittsburgh fans are pretty proud of that victory. I think they're seeing that as a good win for them, whereas we're seeing this as a collapse on West Virginia's part. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Pittsburgh goes out through the rest of the season, see if maybe they can get ranked as the season goes on. But right now, 3-0 before conference play. So we'll see how their season turns out.
Yeah, Corey, you touched upon the receivers that Holstein was able to find. He used different guys in different weeks. Against West Virginia, it was a lot of Poppy Williams Jr. It was also Desmond Reed out of the backfield, which he's loved through the first 3 weeks. But how about on that second and 30 play, they go to Dejon Reynolds, who has yet to have a catch on this season. His first catch is that touchdown to get Pitt back in the striking range and make it a 3-point game with three defenders around him. Should there have been a defensive play made on the ball? Absolutely. It should have never gotten to him. But you still got to give your credit to the kid then for making the catch through the traffic. I mean, that was a phenomenal throw, a phenomenal catch. And West Virginia fans are obviously going to look at the secondary and, point their fingers at that. And some of that is necessary, but it still can't take away from the fact that the pass and catch was made, and by a guy that had yet to make a catch on the season. Zero receptions coming into that game, zero receptions in the game up until that point. That was his first catch all year, and it was the biggest play of the game. That was phenomenal. And it just shows how Holstein trusts his guys. It doesn't matter who's out there. He trusts everybody that's on the field. It was a lot of Poppy Williams that he hadn't really seen too much of all season. Mumpfield did a great job every time Holstein got out of the pocket working with his quarterback. So that was really good. That tandem for Pittsburgh was really good. And like I said, Desmond Reed out of the backfield too. Like he was great. He's always going to be great. He caught two touchdown passes. He's a super explosive player. Even when West Virginia stopped him in the run game and couldn't get anything going, he was able to make things happen out of the backfield. So that Pitt offense was in sync the entire game. And I know, Ryan, you said 4 yards before going into those final two drives. And that was like, that's impressive. And West Virginia should be looking at that. Okay, like, what changed? What went wrong? Was it the play calling? Was it a lot more conservative play calling, being up 10 and almost calling plays not to lose? Was it players just kind of giving up and the effort not being there? But you really have to look at those last 5 minutes and see what changed, because for the rest of that second half, that defense really stepped up, and that was exactly what fans wanted. And it started, like you said, Ryan, with the defensive line. They got pressure on Holstein the entire time. Even in those last 5 minutes, they got pressure. The only difference was they weren't able to bring him down. Holstein broke a lot of sacks, was able to get out of a lot of tackles. So, I mean, that was a really big factor in the game as well. And it is just a shame, because you play such good football for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the second half, in those final 5 or 10 minutes. West Virginia wasn't able to get off the field at all. And like you said, let up 150 yards in just a couple minutes. But you got to look at the positives and find anything you can out of there, because the truth is you did hold the team to 4 yards for 25 minutes of a football half. And that's impressive. So things obviously went right. There's things that you can find from that film room to take moving forward. And then hopefully the coaching staff's able to look at those last 5 minutes, find out what it was, whether it was the play calling, whether it was the players, whether it was a mixture of both, and get corrections on that. But yeah, a lot of good that the defense can hang its hat on moving forward despite the collapse.
Yeah, and one thing that you brought up, and sorry to kind of flip the tables on you here, Ryan, but you can kind of answer this too. I mean, you talked about how Holstein had he seemed to trust his guys, trust his receiving options. Do you think that that's something Garrett Green does? Because, I mean, I'm sure in the locker room, I'm sure he trusts his guys, but you only have two players in that game that caught more than three receptions. You got a lot of guys who had one catch in the game. So he's using different options. I'm not saying that he's not, but I mean, it definitely looks different in West Virginia's box score than it does for Pittsburgh. So, I mean, does there need to be a little bit more versatility in terms of going to a guy? If Jaden Bray has one catch for 44 yards, does Jaden Bray need to be somebody who we're looking at more? If I'm Garrett Green, does Garrett Green need to look at different coverages and see what's happening in a way like Holstein did, or do you think the way he found his guys was effective in this game?
Yeah, and I was actually going to bring that up. You know, Jaden Bray, he's got one catch in this game for 44 yards. You go back to the UAlbany game, he's got one catch for 44 yards. And if you look at West Virginia's stats this season, he's the third leading receiver with two catches for 88 yards. And it's no question that Garrett Green's been spreading the ball out. I mean, the top receiver this season is Cole Taylor. He's got 115 yards. It's just like, who do you want to see more of? I want to see more of Jaden Bray personally. I mean, just look at the two catches he's made. And I also want to see more of Justin Robinson. I know that everybody remembers that catch he made against Pitt, but it's not to be taken away that Hudson Clement, I think people like that touchdown that got taken away from Hudson Clement because of the holding call, people are still really very upset about that. But he's been looking into like the same like five guys, but he's got a lot of receivers. Tanner, I don't know if it was you that asked the question to Chad Scott earlier this week about, is it a depth problem? Is it because you have too much depth? Like, I mean, I know that's not really a thing, like having too much depth, but it's just a lot of guys that Garrett Green can get the ball out to, and it's just not all coming together. The guys aren't being like, they're not getting enough. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get completely what you're saying, Ryan. It's There is a lot of depth. So where do you spread the ball to? That is kind of the issue for Garrett Green and Chad Scott and Neil Brown and the guys running the offense. And they all do similar things very well, which makes it difficult as well. I know they talked about Jaden Bray getting more playing time because he does a little bit of everything well. He blocks on the edge very well, which was an issue late in the game. Neil Brown said they could have won the game on the first down play in just over 2 minutes. They had an easy first down. Somebody missed a block on the outside. He's not obviously going to throw names under the bus, but somebody missed a block on the outside that prevented a first down that could have probably sealed the game for West Virginia on that drive. But they pointed to Jaden Bray, who is great blocking on the perimeter. And that's a much, much underrated part of being a wide receiver is blocking on the edge for those explosive plays. And I think you're going to see a lot more of Jaden Bray. He spoke to the media this week, and the coaches were praising him this week. So I expect to see him more. Justin Robinson, obviously, great catch there. That'll definitely improve your playing time as well. Preston Fox with a bit of an injury, too, that Neil Brown wouldn't talk about too much. They're taking their time with him. He's still up in the air to even play this Saturday. They think he will, but he could be limited. So that could be an opportunity for a player then to step up in that place. But your question, Corey, that you asked was about trusting the wide receivers. And I don't think Garrett has an issue trusting any of the wide receivers. I think it's Garrett trusting in himself. You just don't see him throwing the ball at all. Like he's not throwing the ball. That was the question I asked Chad Scott this week is what is holding Garrett Green back from being what we saw a season ago? Because this is not the Garrett Green that West Virginia fans saw for the last six or seven games of the season last year. He is a lot more timid. You're not seeing his legs at all. He's not confident throwing the football down the field. That was the first shot really all season, the Hudson Clement, I know it's called back, that he really took down the field with an open receiver. He missed the guy on first and 10 in the final drive where West Virginia stalled out in the final seconds that could have gotten the midfield. He had Hudson Clement open, just missed that one. I don't think Garrett Green is trusting in himself and in his arm. And I think a lot of it has to do is the defense is daring Garrett Green to throw the football, almost insulting him, saying you can't throw the football. And I don't know if he's in his head. Chad Scott said, he's got to just not flinch, not think, go play. And he tells the whole offense that, but specifically Garrett Green, because when he's confident, when he's not thinking, when he's just being himself, that's when you see the really good Garrett Green. And we haven't seen that this season at all. Since Penn State, since those fumbles, he hasn't really been able to get anything going. Even against the UAlbany, he had the big one run, but everything else is a lot more just on the ground in the run game and the explosive plays and marching down the field stemming from that rather than Garrett Green making plays down the field. And I know he knows that he probably has to play better and he's going to have another challenge this week with Kansas, but I think it's more of an issue of Garrett Green not trusting himself. He's got the wide receivers around him. Does a wide receiver need to step up and be a clear number one? Absolutely. I mean that is a big issue for West Virginia. There is nobody. There is no security blanket. There is nobody on this team that separates themselves and is like, that is the guy. That is the guy that defenses have to focus on. You have Kobe Bryant, one of the best corners in all of college football, coming to Morgantown. Who's he going to cover? Like, you don't have a guy that you know he's going to follow around, who he's going to be, who the defense is going to focus on that you can build the plays around because they're all so balanced. And while that sounds like a good problem to have, when you get to their third and four, third and fives, where you got to throw the ball, you want that guy. And it seems like they want Treylon Ray to be that guy. They went to him a lot on third downs, but is he? Like somebody's got to step up and really separate themselves, and I haven't seen it yet. So Garrett Green got to get more confident in himself, and some wide receiver has to step up and be the clear number one for West Virginia.
Yeah, and I think exactly to that point of you talking about Garrett Green. I mean, I think that's shown on the final two drives. Well, he had to take shots. It just wasn't clicking. You know what I mean? Like all offseason, the coaches emphasized, let Garrett be Garrett, let him play free. And it just, I haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen it yet. Hopefully, we start to see it here as a Big 12 play starts. But just for a second, I want to go back to what you said a couple of minutes ago, Tanner, about that. Second and 30. So Jordan Leslie was kind of giving his thoughts on that play, and he said that he wanted to take Desmond Reed, wanted to make sure Desmond Reed didn't beat West Virginia. Now, West Virginia stopped Desmond Reed in the running game, obviously, but he did hurt him in the passing game. But it's second and 30. It's not like Dejon Reynolds was wide open in the back of the end zone. He had three guys on him, pass interference, defensive pass interference, and he still made the catch. So honestly, credit to him, but I just think that Leslie wanted to take Desmond Reed out of a second and 30 was just something that was mind-boggling to me. So.
Yeah, you're gonna get me in trouble here, Ryan, going on a rant here. But yeah, I mean, like, why? Why? I mean, it is second and 30. The running back out of the backfield, and I know Desmond Reed is one of the most explosive guys in all of college football. And if there's anybody that's gonna take a little 5-yard pass and take it in for a 40-yard touchdown, it's gonna be Desmond Reed. But why not take your chance with that? Rally to the football. You have second and 30. Even if he makes a 20-yard gain, he makes a couple guys miss, gets into the secondary, you tackle him for a 20-yard gain. It's now third and 10, and it's still a third and long. You have a chance to get a stop and get off the field or force a field goal to then where the worst that happens is overtime, barring they go for two. Why would you not just give up the running back? And I haven't gone back and watched that play because he says that, but there were three guys around the football back deep. So clearly, you know, maybe the linebackers and things, they were focusing on the running back, but they should have had that guy, Reynolds, taken away as well. There were three guys around him. Someone has to make a play on the ball. That could easily be a pick. Game over right there. But even still, to come out and say that the call was to take away the running back out of the backfield. I'm no defensive coordinator, and I know he backed it up with saying, you know, we watched on film the previous 2 weeks that was really explosive, and you know, a play against that in Cincinnati, and we hadn't seen Holstein on film throw the ball downfield. That's great. That was film from the first 2 weeks. How about the football game that is right in front of you that has been taking place for over 3.5 quarters, where Holstein has been lighting you up down the field, and you've taken away everything that Desmond Reed has really been able to do? He hasn't been able to hurt you with his legs. He hasn't been effective and explosive as he's been in the previous two games. And Holstein's been beating you deep. How about instead of focusing on the first 2 weeks when you get late in the fourth quarter, you focus on the football game that you've been playing? Like that's the best tape that you have right there, is the game that you are currently playing. And
Yeah, I
he
agree
based it
with
off the
that
first 2 weeks.
totally.
It's
Yeah.
crazy to base it off the first 2 weeks and not the game that's in front of you. I know he says that they were trying to take away the running back and the wide receiver was still taken away, so that still shouldn't have been given up. But even like if that was the play call, like that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a great line from you, is the best tape is the game in front of you. Because I mean that is crazy to me to think, oh, we didn't think that Holstein would be able to throw long balls down the field. It's like why wouldn't you think that? He's been doing it all game. So like I don't understand what his call was there either. I do understand that like you said, Desmond Reed can catch a ball for 5 yards and then he can go. He can also kind of beat his defenders and then become a receiving option long if he wanted to do that. But to specifically want to take him away from the backfield and make sure, and again, second and 30. That's like there are very few situations where unless West Virginia's defense just completely failed to recognize like the play and try to adapt to it after Reed was given the ball, I feel like there are very few situations in which Reed could have actually converted anything in that situation. So, I mean, again, overall, it was still a fine defensive coverage. It still worked out. Well, it didn't work out, but the actual coverage was there. But I mean, it does speak to a lot of intentions for Jordan Lesley. And I mean, I'm not saying what I feel about it, but fans are upset about Jordan Lesley and how he's been coaching the defense this year. So I mean, not a great look. Not an amazing thing to hear, to see. But I mean, with being a little bit of a lighter offense with Jalen Daniels being a little bit less effective, maybe something that the defense is able to add a little bit more of a reputation this week against Kansas. But I guess we'll just have to see.
Yeah, just one more thing about the backyard brawl before we move on to Kansas. One thing Jordan Lesley said that I did agree with was just missed opportunities. You know, you look at that Dontez Fagan, you could have had a pick six there earlier in the game. That would have shifted momentum. That might have changed the outcome of the game, but just missed opportunities for this West Virginia defense. And now looking forward to Kansas, same situation as West Virginia, in my opinion. You know, a 1-2 team stepping into Big 12 play, and they have a lot to prove. West Virginia has a lot to prove. And I think the key to the game for West Virginia here is limiting Jalen Daniels on the ground. You look at what Eli Holstein just did to them, you look what Drew Aller did to them in week one. That's going to be huge in the outcome of this game.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team you said that's very similar to West Virginia and what they've done so far. It's exactly the same as what West Virginia has done so far. But if anything, Kansas had higher expectations nationally than what West Virginia had. You start the season ranked in the top 25, and now you're losing games to UNLV and Illinois. Obviously, Illinois on the road, they're now in the top 25. You looked good first week. I believe it was, I can't remember who they played. It was some FCS school. So obviously, they looked good. I think it was like Lindenwood or something, if I remember correctly. And they looked good in that game. I know they didn't let up a touchdown. The defense was great. But then from there, I mean, it's been a big struggle for Kansas, specifically on the offensive end. And Jaden Daniels has not looked good. Six interceptions on the season. So the opportunities are going to be there for the secondary to make a play and to have an explosive play and finally get one out of the air and force an interception. It's been there all season. His completion percentage last game against UNLV was about 50%, only averaged 6.4 yards per throw. So he has not been passing the football like he has before. And I know he's coming back from an injury, and maybe that has something to do with it. Even rushing the ball, last week was the first time that we've seen him be somewhat effective. He had no carries the first game, 10 carries against Illinois, only for 35 yards, and then 11 carries for 65 yards, but two touchdowns against UNLV. His legs were the offense in that one. He has been struggling, and it's in the same boat as West Virginia that this is a must-win game because now you're entering conference play where everything changes. You are back to being 0-0, and this is a game to get back on the right track, to get to 1-0 in the conference, keep your conference hopes alive because one of these teams is going to be 1-3. It's inevitable. One of them is going to be 1-3 and 0-1 in the conference after having such high hopes to get to Dallas. And one of them is going to rewrite their season and have a chance to start running the table now and get back on track. So they are in the same boat. Kansas is going to be coming in here hungry. They are better than a 1-2 football team, just like West Virginia fans know that they are better than a 1-2 football team. It's going to be a good game. They're in very similar boats, and I'm excited. I'm excited to see two motivated and passionate teams.
Yeah, what West Virginia should love about Kansas as a matchup is that the Mountaineers did well against Pittsburgh in pressuring the quarterback and everything at the defensive line last weekend. That is exactly where Kansas will be pressured. I mean, like Jalen Daniels got pressured by UNLV and essentially crumbled in the passing game. Like you said, Tanner, 50% completion rate. No touchdowns with two interceptions. So if that's not a guy that you can put pressure on and cause to panic and cause to not make things happen, then I don't know what West Virginia needs to do to fix things in terms of right in front of the quarterback goes. I mean, obviously the secondary needs to adjust, but I think there's enough that they I think they can do enough to take Jalen Daniels out of this game from just putting pressure right on him. And that's going to be similar with their run game because, I mean, we talk about how situation-wise West Virginia and Kansas are in very similar places. Offensively, they're kind of in similar places as well where, I mean, Kansas lives a little bit, at least last week against UNLV, lives a little bit more in the run game because they have a quarterback that can run the ball. They also have Devin Neal that they trust a little bit more than any of their individual receivers, it feels like. But the difference is that where they have a little bit more of a run game than they do a receiving game, they have less of both of those things than West Virginia does. So West Virginia has less things that they have to deal with, and they know exactly, at least it seems to me, they should know exactly what to deal with and have the abilities to handle it. So I mean, put pressure on, stop the run, stop the quarterback. I think that's definitely something that the Mountaineers will be capable of do even if the secondary isn't living up to the expectations that it needs to. And if there's enough pressure on the quarterback, then I think that'll make the secondary look good because again, two interceptions from Jalen Daniels. I think that will last week. I think he's got to throw at least one or two this week to the Mountaineers if they put the right amount of pressure on him. So, yeah, West Virginia, I think, should be happy with the kind of situation that they're in, but they cannot give up anything. They need to play like their season depends on this because it kind of does. Their season does kind of depend on this game here.
And fans shouldn't forget, and West Virginia shouldn't forget, though, Corey, that this is a quarterback that was in Heisman talks all of last season before his injury. He came into the season again in Heisman talks. This is the worst that anybody has ever seen Jaden Daniels play. Up until this season, he's been one of the most electric, explosive quarterbacks on the field. Like, West Virginia fans want to credit Garrett Green. He takes shots down the field. He's super mobile in the pocket. And that kind of, that scares me for West Virginia because that's been the issue. They've let Drew Aller scramble on them. Eli Holstein was able to get out of the pocket and make plays downfield. And that's what Jalen Daniels thrives on. I forget who it was in Neil Brown's press conference today, but it says they told him basically, well, it looks like Jalen Daniels is good at all the things that West Virginia struggles to stop. And Neil Brown said, that's a very fair point. We struggle. And Jalen Daniels, if you're Jalen Daniels, and Neil Brown said he's probably excited coming into this game, and he should be, because this is an opportunity for him, just like it is for West Virginia. Look at the first three games. It's an opportunity for West Virginia's secondary to force a play, get back. But now it's also a chance for Jaden Daniels, if you're looking at the first three games of West Virginia, to say, okay, I can get my season back on track now. This is a defense that I'm going to be able to pick apart down the field. I'm going to be able to get out of the pocket. I'm going to get back to being me, being that Heisman contender that had Kansas ranked consistently in the top 25 the past two seasons, something that hasn't been done for a very long time. So Jalen, excuse me, is going to be coming into this game probably fired up to play West Virginia's secondary and play the defensive line that's getting guys out of the pocket. And while statistically he hasn't been great, he's still what makes this team and offense go. And if he can get going for Kansas, it's going to be an issue for West Virginia. So the challenge for the Mountaineers is still clearly going to be to stop him, because he is a Heisman level talent. He just hasn't played like it since coming back from his injury yet.
Yeah, and just speaking on West Virginia secondary real quick, Neil Brown said that we're going to see some new personnel working their way in there. You got Jacoby Spells, who I feel like we haven't seen a lot of in a long time. Just looking back to his freshman season, that big pick six against Virginia Tech. And then you look at TJ Crandell, transfer sophomore from he was at Colorado State as a freshman last year, and now he's here at West Virginia. So it'd be interesting to see how they perform. I mean, obviously there's been a lot of questions surrounding West Virginia secondary, and see if they change the outcome there on Saturday. But now let's look over to West Virginia's offense real quick. Obviously, all eyes are on Garrett Green. We've been talking about it this podcast, and see if he can effectively move the ball downfield and help West Virginia into great position to score.
I mean, I think effectively moving the ball down the field shouldn't be too much of an issue for West Virginia. But, to kind of answer your question, is it Garrett Green that can do it? Because we know the rushing attack is going to be great. 17 of the last 18, it might even be 18 of the last 19 games for West Virginia, they've rushed for 140 yards. It was no different against Pitt, Jaheim White, CJ Donaldson. While they weren't able to necessarily make the explosive plays that we've seen a season ago, I mean, they were consistently picking up 5, 6 yards, 6 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards. It was just marching the ball down the field. But can Garrett Green do it is the question, because there's going to be drives, 2-minute drills, things of that sort, that Garrett Green's going to have to make plays with his arm. I mean, it's a football, it's 2024 college football. You have to be able to throw the ball if you want to compete. And we really haven't seen Garrett Green do it yet. He started the game all right against Pittsburgh. I think he completed 7 of his first 9 passes for 91 yards and a touchdown or something like that. But it didn't look great from there. And Kansas is going to dare him to throw the football. That's basically what every team is going to do. Load the box up against West Virginia and dare him to throw the football. And he's got to have some confidence in himself. West Virginia fans want to see that cocky, arrogant, trash-talking Garrett Green back onto the field that picked defenses apart last year, took shots downfield, and scored a lot of points. And I think he can get back to that against this Kansas defense. He's just got to watch out for Kobe Bryant on the defensive end. He's one of the best corners in all of college football. He's probably going to be playing field side, considering West Virginia doesn't have much, a number one wide receiver. Maybe he follows Clement around. Maybe he follows Treylon Ray around. We'll see what Kansas elects to do with him. But you got to be able to locate him, because if you remember 2 years ago here with JT Daniels, Kobe Bryant was the one with that pick six that ended the game in overtime. So it is something to watch out for. He's going to be a first-round pick. Garrett Green has to see where he's at all times, locate Kobe Bryant, and kind of go from there. The rushing attack's going to be there. I don't have any doubts or problems with that. But can Garrett Green move the ball down the field with his arm? I think he's going to have to against his defense.
Yeah, and like you said, he needs to be aware of Bryant, but the one thing he can't be is afraid of Kansas's secondary as a whole. He can't be afraid to throw the ball here because I mean, Kansas has been effective in I mean, Maybe they haven't seen a quarterback like Derek Green, but they've been effective in holding the quarterbacks they've been going against. Against Illinois, they held Luke Altmyer to 16 of 25 completion rate, and they held Sluka from UNLV for 7 for 18 last week, who obviously made more distance on the ground as a rushing threat. But regardless, the passing game was very limited by Kansas in those games. Garrett Green needs to be the one to stop that. He needs to be the one to break that streak and become the quarterback that can make things happen against this Jayhawks defense. So, again, I've said it like three times. We'll just have to wait and see what actually happens. But at the end of the day, I think Garrett Green will have the opportunities to run. He saw that Matthew Sluka was able to do it against Kansas last week. So he should feel a little bit more comfortable in himself on the ground to be able to do things. But at the end of the day, he really needs to be confident and comfortable throwing and using his arm, because if he's not, then there's just so little production that West Virginia can actually do offensively, even though they have all the options available to them. Like we said, they have very versatile option offense with a lot of options available to them in the receiving game. So it would be a shame if he continues to not use any of them just because he's scared of Kansas's defense here. So, I mean, be aware, know where guys are at all times. You know where the core of their defense is. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to confidence. That's going to be key in this matchup.
Like we've said, both teams are going to be coming in hungry on Saturday, and one team is going to leave defeated. For Ryan Roddy, Corey Moore, Tanner Mounts, thanks for joining us today.